We need to talk.
There's something I'd like to talk to you about.
I'm listening. Talk to me.
It's time to Talk It Over, starring Diane Diamond, Lee J. Berman, and Louise Palanker. Give us a call at 888-531-7171. Email us at talkitover@gmail.com. You can talk to me. Talk to me. Join us online at talkitoverradio.com. You can talk to me. Talk it over. Because we're ready to talk it over.
Hello, I'm your moderator, Louise Palanker, an astute student of human nature. Or so I've been told by others who are astute students of me. Our co-host, Diane Diamond, is also with us here from her perch in New York.
Hey, hey, everybody. Good evening.
Hi, Diane. You know her as a reporter, a journalist, an author. And we also have the glue who holds our show together, professional mediator Lee J. Berman.
Hello, hello.
How are you, Lee J?
I'm good. How's everybody?
And, you know, we have the glue. Oh, no, that was the glue. Cut, edit. Helping us bring the program to you today is our esteemed engineer, Matt Sigmund.
Howdy.
And our producer, Patricia Bach. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hey, glad to be back Trish together again after our little holiday break.
We had a little hiatus, you know, out of respect for the writer's strike.
I thought it was something called Thanksgiving.
It was, yes. Yeah. Yes.
One anyway, glad to be back with all of you. Good. What's any fabulous news from any of you this week?
Oh gosh, so much is going on. Lots of good stuff, good controversy, good stuff. I don't know. I'm going to have to think about my, you know, what about what in my personal life I can chat about publicly. you know, I'm usually such an open book, but
that racy, huh?
Lately things have been a little muddled. I went home for Thanksgiving. I went to Buffalo, New York. Mm-hmm. And when you go home to Buffalo, New York at Thanksgiving time, the big fear is, will I be able to escape? Because if a big snowstorm socks you in, then you're just kind of there throughout the duration of the winter. And it was raining, but I was able to get out. So here I am back in Los Angeles, and everything is quite well. How about you, Lee J?
I had a little bit better weather. I had a training program to do in Dubai.
Oh, you're just saying that.
Nope.
Rub it in.
I go to Buffalo. He doesn't top me with Detroit or Philadelphia.
Chicago, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. He's got to go all the way to Dubai.
Followed by 5 days in Paris on the way home, because, you know, you had to stop somewhere. You can't fly 22 hours, you know, uninterrupted.
Twist the knife in.
Just shut up.
Yeah, I actually caught a bit of a cold skiing in Dubai because it was 90 degrees outside and 28 in the ski resort indoors.
Oh, you went to that?
In the mall.
That's bad.
Oh, how cool.
It was a blast.
So is the skiing next to the Gap or next to the Banana Republic?
All of the above. You can sit in a restaurant and watch people, you know, you're in a tank top and shorts and people are skiing next to you with hats and gloves and earmuffs and everything. It was just bizarre. And you're skiing down the ski lift and you're looking into stores. And they have all American stores in their malls there. I mean, you know, aside from all the big designers that are American and European, they have TGI Fridays. There's a big line outside because it's a very big deal in Dubai. It's just wild.
Now, I want to get this clear. There is a ski lodge inside a mall?
Not just the lodge, an entire ski lift with a chairlift and everything. It's all indoors and enclosed. They make their own.
To know what they're doing with our oil money over there, right?
Exactly right.
My God. Well, I feel boring. I drove like 45 minutes away. I went to Brooklyn for Thanksgiving with my daughter and her family. So, you know, I'm kind of boring.
That sounds like a sitcom, Thanksgiving in Brooklyn.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had to go crossing Delancey, if you believe it or not.
But now the weekend before, you had a little getaway trip, didn't you?
Well,
a particular birthday.
It was my birthday. Yes. You know, I was 39 years old. And I did. I went upstate near the Berkshires, near the Massachusetts border. Oh, so beautiful up there. And because my birthday is in the middle of November, I, of course, all the leaves are changing at that time. So it was really nice.
Oh,
it was
beautiful.
Really, really nice.
Just beautiful.
Yeah.
Cool.
And we're all back and we're ready to, now that we've had a beautiful getaway, we're ready to delve into people's angry, ugly disputes.
Yeah. And that's why we do call the show Talk It Over. And if you've got something to talk it over with us about, especially Lee J. Berman, our professional mediator, you can give us a call at 888-531-7171. I'll say that again slower, 888-531-7171. Or Louise, what's the best email? They can just write us an email, right?
Sure, they can email us at talkitover@gmail.com.
There you have it.
And then, at that point, it's type it over, but let's not get it. We three
will talk it over.
Yes.
You know, I was looking at something in the news this week that Lee J, I know you were busy in Dubai, after all, skiing inside, but boy, did they need you back here. Did you hear this story about this young girl, 13 years old, out of Missouri? I bet you didn't.
I heard something about, oh my goodness, yes I did.
Yeah, well let me just do a little recap here for people who didn't. Her name is Megan Meyer, 13 years old. You know how girls are at that age, a little bit overweight. She has braces. She and her best friend, who live four doors down from her, had a big nasty breakup, she and her girlfriend, and they weren't speaking to each other. And this young girl, Megan Meyer, had a history of depression in her family. So her parents were watching her very closely. They knew the situation. But then she got very happy because online, on MySpace, she made friends with a boy, some kid named Josh Evans. And they were emailing back and forth, and he was saying wonderful things about her and just had really perked up her spirits. Well, after a few weeks of this, Josh Evans turns on her on the internet, starts saying very hateful things. He wrote something like, you know, I think the world would be a better place without you. And little Megan Meyer just went into another depressive tailspin, and she went upstairs and she hanged herself in the closet, and she died. Now here is where the mediation would have come in had anybody known. I can't even believe this story. There was no Josh Evans. There was no boy. The person behind the profile on MySpace was the girl who lived four doors away, who had had a fight with Megan. It was her mother. Her mother got online, set up this dummy profile under the name Josh Evans, and was trying to see if Megan Meyer was saying nasty things about her daughter.
Wow.
And then for some reason, she decided to turn on this young girl, fully knowing her depressive history.
Yeah.
And the girl killed herself. Now, these families still live four doors away from each other. Can you imagine?
Not at all. I don't know where to begin with this. You know, do you start with the parent who's overly involved in the social goings-on of the daughter's life so that she's going on to MySpace to monitor what her friend is saying about her daughter and then toying with the friend the way that she did? Do you talk about how children need to be aware that they never know who they're talking to on MySpace when they think they have a friend? There's so many things at work here. And then, of course, the unbelievable finish to this is the mother, Lori Drew, pretending to be this Josh Meyer, who sends this girl into a tailspin, and she hangs herself. She's 13 years old. I can't imagine having a child, raising him as an infant, teaching them to walk and talk and everything else, and at 13 years old, they hang themselves because the neighbor, the grown-up neighbor four doors down, was toying with her psyche. I can't fathom it.
Well, the first thing you'd want to do is have charges filed. But Louise, you know this story. The police say there's no law was broken.
Well, it's uncharted territory. And, the internet is bringing into our lives all kinds of complications that we could not have foreseen. This is a perfect example of you do not know what is going to go wrong until it goes wrong. I mean, like Lee J said, there are so many levels to this. First of all, I do know that parents set up dummy accounts so that they can check their own children's MySpace to make sure there isn't anything inappropriate that their own child is posting. They don't set up dummy accounts to pretend to be an attractive boy and flirt with neighborhood girls. That is just insane. And the other part to this is that that child could have hung herself for any variety of reasons. And so I don't know if charges are the right way for this situation to be handled, because I do not think that the mother, as ill-conceived as her efforts were, I do not think she ever meant for anyone to die. She's just one of those crazy-ass moms, as I'll call them, who get way too involved and have a little bit too much fun doing it.
Yeah.
But I think that you're right. But here they are living four doors away from each other. I guess really the mediation question to you, Lee J, would be, is there any way in hell to mediate peace between these two families? I mean, how do they coexist without seething anger eating away at them?
Well, two things. First of all, there's always a way. And yes, it can be done. And some of the disputes that I mediate day in and day out have about this much charge, you know, whether you've got negligent medical malpractice and children and people who were dying on the operating table unnecessarily or afterwards, and the families confronting the doctor, or all sorts of situations like this. The trick is, the first most important thing is the timing. You know, I've said before, you can mediate really early in a dispute, and you can mediate, it's never too late to mediate at the end, you know, further on down the line. This is one where there's grieving like this going on. Timing is so critically important. You have to let people go through certain stages of their anger before they can sit down at the table. While it's helpful for them to be able to vent and to, and to be able to get off their chest part of that anger, that's not really the productive dialogue between the parties. The real talking it over has to come when they've worked themselves through that. And typically this can take 4 or 5 months. And then sitting them down at the table and saying, let's talk about this, and giving the mom down the block, with some coaching, the opportunity to really apologize and hopefully cry her own eyes out at what she's been responsible for. And that's how they begin talking it over.
Yeah, I'm the mother of a daughter, and I just cannot imagine looking at someone who I thought precipitated my child's death and really ever forgiving them. I mean, I'm a Christian, and it's based on forgiveness, but I don't know where in the world inside me I would find that.
Well, here's what I would say to you if it were you. I would say, yes, what she did was wrong. It's hard to forgive her actions. But we have to look at your daughter and recognize that there was something vulnerable about your daughter, that some fake kid on MySpace who didn't even exist saying bad things about her could send her into a place so deep that she would actually go upstairs and hang herself. There was something there that if this didn't set it off, something would have. And at some point, you would nod your head or put your head down and acknowledge an acceptance that there was something else wrong here other than just what the mom did.
So, and redirect the anger to realization.
Yeah, that to a certain extent there was,
your daughter had a flaw.
Yeah.
Well, she was spun into this depressive estate over a person she had never met.
Yeah.
This child was in pain already.
And the last thing you want to do is call the child flawed, really, or make the mother feel responsible for being a bad parent. You just want to make her realize that she had a fragile daughter, and that if something like this could have set her off, imagine what a real romantic relationship would have done.
Exactly.
If she was, you know, 17, 18 years old and then got, you know, gave her heart to a guy and got dumped. She was in a state where there was something wired wrong in her poor little brain, and it wasn't her fault, it wasn't her mother's fault. And while what the woman did down the street was unforgivable, this woman had no way of knowing that her little girl would go upstairs and kill herself. So letting her off the hook to a certain extent as to the causation, but holding her accountable for her actions, and hopefully she'd take accountability herself for her own actions about how wrong it was what she did.
There's a lot of crazy, cruel stuff going on MySpace and Facebook. This is only the beginning of it, because it resulted in a death. There is a lot of really, really sick stuff being done to people publicly humiliating people on MySpace and Facebook. So if anyone has any stories they'd like to share with us about that, or how we can better handle that as a society, as an intern, as an online society, go ahead and write us or call us, because we would love to talk about this further. It's a brand new, within the last
Absolutely.
5 years, problem, or as much as we welcome the internet into our lives, it's a reflection of life, and it's only as good or as bad as the people online.
Yeah, I really would love to hear from people out there, Louise. That's a great suggestion. Here's our toll-free number. Give us a call, 888-531-7171, or just write us at talkitover@gmail.com about MySpace or any conflict that you might have in your life. You know, Louise, you and I know a young boy who, it's way too long a story to go into now, whose life was really put into turmoil because of a nasty little hoax one of his classmates played online, or somebody played online to him. I just wonder, in this day and age, why parents allow their kids to even be on MySpace. You work with a lot of kids. Are they all on MySpace?
The ones over 15 are all on MySpace. It's sort of like the modern version of being able to decorate your room and put up posters. It's a reflection of your little personality emerging, and I think it's a good outlet for expression. I just think that you need to know what your kid is doing. You need to have him show you his page every day, or her page every day. He needs to know that you have an account and that you're able to look at his profile. However you want to handle it within your family. Most kids are healthy enough to be in this environment and not be so wounded by this or that being said about them. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure if this had been around when I was 15, I would have been all over it. It's way too much fun and too social and too expressive to tell a child, stay off it, when it's really all that anyone's talking about at school.
You know, when we talk about talking it over with kids, though, there's something important about this. If your child goes to school and somebody calls him or her names, or, you know, beats somebody up or hurts their feelings, we encourage him to come home and talk to mom and dad about it. And I think that MySpace is no different. I think children have to talk about their social relationships, even if they're simply online, with their parents. Parents have to encourage that and say, look, if somebody calls you names or hurt your feelings, let's talk about this. And, you know, if you think you have a crush on a boy or a girl, let's talk about this. And engage them, rather than letting the computer be the babysitter, which is what the television was last generation.
Well, one hard and fast and clean rule is you do not add anyone as a friend you have not met in the flesh, period.
Oh, interesting.
You see, now I wouldn't even have thought of that, because when I was a kid, okay, more than 39 years ago, I had pen pals that I wrote to. And I never met them either, but it was such fun to get to know people long distance like that. But it's very different now.
A pen pal is there's a lot of space between you and your pen pal. The internet is very immediate. The messages fly back and forth. You see the boy's picture, and mm-hmm. he could be like any of those kids that were your pen pal, Diane. They could have been a 59-year-old Asian man. We don't know. And you'll never know.
Or a 59-year-old Asian woman, you know. God
forbid. We don't know.
That is really, I think that was really good advice, Lee J, to let the anger simmer down and then say, you know, your daughter contributed to her own problem. It wasn't just this lady catapulting it into a terrible reality for you down the street.
Yeah, you know, if there's one more thing we can say about it, though, and I would never, ever, ever say this to the mother, but if the daughter was that depressed, she should have been under the care of a good psychiatrist. She should have been probably medicated in some way with antidepressants.
Well, I think she was.
Oh,
I think she was,
okay.
According to what I've read.
Oh, good. Good.
You know what the saddest part is? And then we'll move on to the next story. I guess you have, Lee J. The saddest thing was, when I read this story, the mother knew that this boy, this non-existent boy, Josh Evans, had said terrible things to her daughter, and that her daughter was upset because her daughter came right downstairs and told her. And she said she commiserated with her, and the daughter went back upstairs. And then, as the mother said, it was too quiet for about 15 minutes. And I went up and I found her hanged. So in 15 minutes, despite depression medication, despite having talked it over with her own mother, this is what she did anyway.
And see, that's the conversation that I would have with the mother. And I would say, you did everything you could do. The doctors did everything they could do. And still something was so fragile in her that there was no preventing this. And that makes more sense now that I understand the whole picture. Thank you, Diane.
Well, thank you. I wish that they had you as a mediator there in Missouri. Yeah. So, do you have a story about a stripper? What?
Well, there's something that came across our desk about a mother attempting to send a birthday telegram to her son's school, and apparently there was a mix-up at the telegram office or the telegram dispatch desk.
Yes, this is one of those singing telegram companies, but apparently they also do adult-themed telegrams, and the son was 16, so he's in high school, and they sent him a birthday greeting, but it turned out to be a stripper.
Oh la la!
At school. At school.
Now, come on. Who was this, Binky LaRue or something? When she went there, didn't she realize it was a high school?
She played it quite well, so I don't know what she was thinking, but one witness said that she asked the boy to stand up and told him he had been a very naughty boy because he hadn't been doing his homework.
Oh, geez.
How far did she then go?
She spanked him in front of the class.
Oh, God, she bring a boombox with her playing stripper
she
music?
She did!
Right. Oh, it was Britney Spears
music. Yes!
Oh,
well, then
so,
she's being
okay,
a very bad stripper.
Oops, yeah. She did it again.
What was the upshot here? Was somebody suspended or charged with lewd behavior or something?
Let's see. No one has been suspended because it was an accident on the part of the company. I don't know if any action's been... the school is investigating, but they haven't taken any action against the singing telegram company yet.
She didn't accuse anyone of rape, did she?
No.
Never mind. Never mind.
Yeah, but that 16-year-old kid is probably the envy of all of his male classmates, right?
I was trying to decide if I was 16 and that happened to me at high school, whether I would suddenly be... you know, the big man on campus or the most embarrassed guy for the rest of my life.
Well, the beautiful thing was after she led him around the room, apparently she had stripped all the way down to her bra and panties at that point and put some lotion on her rear end and bent over and wanted him to rub it in. And that's that is when the teacher said, maybe something's wrong
then.
Here. We better stop the show here.
She let it go that long.
What class was this?
And was it a male teacher or a female teacher? What's going on here?
Lots of wood shop.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I get it.
I set it up. You knock it home.
What a bump.
Unbelievable.
Well, you know, I guess there's not much to mediate there. But here's a similar thing, though. A school.
I want to know before we move on, Diane, I want to know what poor... bachelor party gun.
The gorilla. The happy
dancing
birthday gorilla.
All right, go ahead.
That's
go ahead.
Funny.
Some bachelor party got a guy holding up some Mylar balloons and singing a bad rendition of Happy Birthday, right?
Yeah, I have a feeling that school is going to negotiate some free clowns and gorillas for years in the future.
Something. Well, it just reminded me of something else that was in the news this week having to do with school that certainly could have used a mediator like you, Lee J. There's a four-year-old little boy in Waco, Texas. This is, according to Newsweek magazine, a growing trend in this country. He's 4 years old. He was suspended for sexual harassment. Now, this is not sexual behavior or, you know, lifting up a girl's skirt. It's sexual harassment. So what did he do? Well, it turned out that a female school aide reported to the authorities at the school, the principal or somebody, that the child, this is the quote, buried his face in her chest when she hugged him.
That little perv.
And she went to the authorities at the school and said, you know, sexual harassment. And they suspended this little boy. And according to Newsweek, it's happening all over the country. You know, little kids, which it's a normal thing for them to hug or poke or pinch each other. And 4, 5, 6-year-olds are being suspended right and left for sexual harassment.
Isn't that how you hug a child? Isn't that the definition of hugging a child?
And doesn't that teach them about love and bonding when they bury their face in your chest or your arm or you're somewhere?
It's a squeeze, yeah.
Come on.
Unbelievable. And, you know, here's a poor, confused four-year-old boy. He's four. He's spent half of his life breastfeeding.
Is he being kept from the knowledge of what's going on? Does he know that what he's being accused of?
Yes, apparently he did. His father was quoted as saying, you know, I had to give my 15-year-old son the birds and the bees talk. And this one, at 4 years old, I was trying to explain something as obtuse as sexual harassment to him. The little boy knows about it. Another mother quoted as saying, you know, I don't know what to do with my little girl. She's got this silly habit of putting her skirt up over her head and showing her panties to everybody. Is that going to be sexual harassment?
But how many little girls do that? It seems like one in five runs around doing that when they're three, four years old.
With the stripper company.
Well, see, isn't it a dichotomy? One guy gets like a peep show brought into the class and nothing happens. Yeah. But this little boy reciprocates a hug and he gets suspended.
I'm also thinking we're out in the workplace every day trying to teach people who are 25 to 55 what sexual harassment is. And we expect a four-year-old to understand this? We have men in the workplace who are afraid to say you look nice today, or women in the workplace who can't find the fine line between flirting and being friendly to their boss.
Showing their panties.
Yeah. and we expect a four-year-old.
I never did that.
Which showed your panties?
Well, Matt, that's not what I hear, Matt.
Ixnay on the...
<Andy's back.
laughs> Never mind.
I guess, Lee J, the mediation question to you, Lee J, would be how do you mediate between, say, that mother who's worried about her little four-year-old showing her panties and the school system whose pendulum has swung so far to the other side that they've, in my estimation, got it all confused.
Wait, can I ask one more question before we go any further? What's with this teacher? Has she been sexually abused or molested? What would make a woman accuse a little boy of something like this?
Wheezy's going exactly where I'm going. I mean, you got to get them all. First of all, in this... The one with the little boy, not the little girl. And the one with the little boy who buried his head in the teaching aide's breasts or whatever. You got to get them all together in separate rooms, and you've got to figure out what's driving this for each one. We know what's driving it for the principal. There has to be zero tolerance. We know what's driving it for the parents. This seems like an outrageous accusation. The four-year-old, we sort of saved till last. But you've got to sit down with the teacher's aide and say, what was the difference between this and every other four-year-old boy you hugged? And... you know, if the kid did something that was intentional and that was obscene, I'm not hearing it in the news story the way Diane's telling us. It sounds like he just buried his face. I mean, if you're a full-figured woman and you're 4'10", 5 feet tall, and you got a 4-foot kid who's 4 years old or however tall they are, his head is going to go against your chest when you hug him. There's nowhere else for him to put that head. I'd have to understand from her perspective what he did that rose to the level that she felt the need to report it and persecute or punish him. And then, and only then, can we sit down with the four-year-old and say, here's what is going on. And
how would you explain it to a four-year-old, Lee J?
Ooh, you're going to put me in the corner. Let's think about this.
You betcha.
Assuming that the teacher says it was just a little too something, it was too long, it was too something, then I'd have to sit with him and say, you know, sometimes grown-ups are a little protective of their bodies. And when you hug a grown-up, you can hug them for a moment, but sometimes it's too long. And so, you know, we just have to be, boy, this is tough. This is really difficult.
And it makes people feel uncomfortable if you hold on to the hug too long, and then you, ugh.
Yeah, because then he's afraid to hug his mom and dad for a big, long hug. And God forbid he's, you know, comes off the Little League diamond crying because he struck out, and somebody, you know, his mom or his dad hugs him, and he feels like, oh, it's been a second. I have to let go now. You don't want to traumatize. I think, frankly, I'd leave the kid out of it unless he did something really egregious or really intentional that the teacher thought he knew what he was up to. Which I would have to hope that's what it was, or that she wouldn't have had any other cause to have intervened.
You know, I would leave the kid completely out of this for a lot of reasons, unless he did something like reach inside her blouse and grab one of her breasts.
Mm-hmm. Because and there's no indication he did that.
Because unless he did that, I would just leave him completely out of this, and I would handle it between the adults and find out why the woman felt that she had to use those words, sexual harassment. Well, I mean, I can sometimes it's true you don't know how to react to the way a child is behaving if they're behaving in a sexual manner.
Yeah.
I can remember, I'm not going to mention the relationship between me and the child, but a little boy who's related to me was coming out of a shower, and he was about 4, and he straddled me standing up, grabbed his little
hoo-ha,
and said, "Look at this." So you don't want to say, "No, I don't want to look at that." You don't want to see. You don't want to say, "Wow, that is impressive." I mean, what's the correct
answer? Or if that's
nasty,
put it away.
You don't want to
you
that.
Just you giggle and go, "Put your clothes on, young man," you know, and you pass it off that way because
right.
he doesn't know what he's doing.
And I think I said something along those lines.
Yeah,
I said, You're being silly. Put your clothes on.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't want to do anything that's going to in any way damage their full and total development as a human being.
I agree.
That is a tough thing, especially, I mean, speaking as a parent of 2 young children, you know, you don't want to make them embarrassed of their bodies.
Right.
At the same time, you have to teach them what are the normal boundaries, you know, normal ways of acceptable ways of touching and hugging people in public and so forth. And that is it's actually something that I'm constantly thinking about, you know, whatever I say and the ramifications of it, you know.
And reiterate the ages of your kids are?
I have a son who's 5 in kindergarten and a daughter who's 7 in second grade.
Yeah.
Really, we're trying to keep them in the comfort zone with their own bodies, not make them embarrassed.
Yeah.
You know, although I worry sometimes that maybe they don't, you know, maybe they're, you know, too inclined to say if we're at the relative's house and they go and have a bath and they'll just come running out from the bathroom stark naked, you know, but they're still young enough that that's not too big a deal. But, you know, it's like at some point you need to set that boundary, but without making them feel bad that
there's something wrong.
My body is something that should not ever be shown to other people. I'm embarrassed of it because there's going to come a time, you know, where
they're going to have to work as nude models.
Exactly. I mean, they've got to support my retirement somehow.
Thank
you
work,
for
guys,
saving
then.
Me from
all right,
that.
Let me figure out how to bring it home. Let me take this where I think it's really going. I think this has absolutely nothing to do with the 4-year-old.
No, me
I
either.
Think this is a teacher's aide who says, "Aha, maybe I can hit the lottery and I can sue the school district for sexual harassment and I'll get a nice settlement from the school district's insurance fund and I won't have to work again."
That is.
Do you see that kind of stuff a lot in your line of work? I mean, as a mediator,
yes.
Lee J, you must see all sorts of sincere and very unsincere people.
I do. And I see that you're absolutely right. I see the full gambit. I see the full extreme from one to the other. I see sexual harassment cases where I'll come home and I'll tell my wife a little bit about the case, leaving out the names and everything else, of course. And she'll say to me, "Well, do you think he did it?" And the truth is, as a mediator, it's not my job to decide if he did or if he didn't. And I'm so focused on helping them to get a settlement for the case that I, after spending 14 or 15 hours with them sometimes, I still can't tell. There are other times when you can just look at people and know by how they conduct themselves and by their personality and by the values they display during the mediation, what kind of person they are and what probably happened.
And who they grope on their way in.
Yeah.
Well, but you're like me. You're trained as a reporter, as a journalist. I'm trained to see both sides of everything.
Exactly.
So while I might in my heart of hearts think, "Yeah, you're really overreacting," or, you know, "You're probably wrong," when I speak about things, I try to always give both sides. And so it's hard to say, you know, who's right and who's wrong.
Yeah, I agree. And as a mediator, just like as a reporter, that's not our job, which is hard for some people to understand, especially the attorneys for these parties. You know, the attorney for the victim will say to me, "Can't you tell what a jerk he is at this point? You spent the whole day with him." And in the other room, they're saying exactly the same thing about them. So, you know, it's not our job to decide who's right and wrong. It's our job to help, in your case, report it, and in my case, resolve it. So it's an odd position, but yes, I think that's where this, I think that's what this case is probably all about. I don't think it's about a 4-year-old misbehaving as much as probably a teacher's aide who's got dollar signs in her eyes.
Now, see, I didn't even think of that. I thought of a school district just, you know, typically overreacting. Somebody throws a spitball and the whole class gets detention,
yeah,
you know, that
it,
kind of a thing.
It could be that, too. There's so much going on these days about the overcorrection, the pendulum having swung too far the other way. We got to find our balance point.
I'm hearing you. Hey, if you have a conflict in your life and you want Lee J to give you some great free professional advice, give us a call, 888-531-7171, 888-531-7171, or you can just send us an email at talkitover@gmail.com. Hey, listen, I've got one. I wish they give you the mediation job on this one, Lee J. It has two big bold-faced names involved.
Oh, really? Bold-faced names,
one?
Yes.
Yeah. Bold-faced names. Celebrity catfight. Sharon Osbourne. You know Sharon Osbourne. I don't really know how to describe her talent except mother of some drug addicts and she's married to Izzy Osbourne. Anyway, Sharon Osbourne has, I've always heard that she hates Courtney Love, the rock star Courtney Love, but I never really knew why. Well, now it's bubbled out. It's being replaced that Sharon Osbourne believes that it was Courtney Love who gave her son and got her son hooked on OxyContin.
Wow.
And he was 15 years old at the time, Jack Osbourne, if you remember his name. And he'd already been through rehab. Somehow he crosses paths with Courtney Love, according to Sharon Osbourne. And Courtney Love gets this kid hooked on OxyContin. Well, Courtney Love says this is absolute fantasy. She did no such thing. You know, all these expletives deleted toward the Sharon Osbourne camp. But now Osbourne is hiring an attorney to see if she can get criminal charges filed against Courtney Love. I mean, now when is this madness going to end? I mean, neither side needs a public trial.
It's true. It's true. And here's what happens, first of all, in celebrity things like this, celebrity conflict like this. They'll sit down in a mediation, and I've mediated with tons of celebrities, including many that we've talked about on this show. I just can't say that.
Dish.
I can't, because mediation's confidential. But you sit down in a confidential mediation session where one calls the other one names, and they go back and forth, and at the end, not only do they have some agreement about, you know, money changing hands or, you know, what's going to be done between them or whatever, and it always ends with this glorious press release that says, and you've probably read about the conflicts between the producer and the actress in this movie, but they've all been resolved now, and the movie's coming to a theater near you, and here's a quote from the director, and here's a quote from the producer, and here's a quote from the actress, and everybody go see the movie. Exactly.
Everybody's happy.
Exactly. So this is one, first of all, let's face it, we're in a society right now where celebrities need ink. Otherwise, you wouldn't see them running around without their underwear on and things like that. Everybody's fighting to get on the cover of all of these celebrity rag magazines.
The only one who's honest about it is Kathy Griffin.
yeah, you're right.
At least she's honest about it.
So with these two, the question is, do they really want to sit down behind closed doors with Jack and Sharon Osbourne and with Courtney Love and have a conversation, even with their lawyers, about what they're going to do about this? Or are they just trying to get some headlines because they have upcoming reality shows to promote or some nonsense like that?
And my immediate reaction to this situation is, if you ever watched any episodes of The Osbournes, Sharon and Ozzy were letting their son Jack be a club kid at the age of 15. So who knew who was giving him what, especially since drug addiction runs in his family? Look at his father wobble around for a few moments and you'll know.
Right. And the mother, Sharon Osbourne, used to weigh like, I don't know, 300 pounds or something.
Wow.
And then suddenly she was thin. And don't tell me she didn't do that without a couple of Fen. You know? Anyway, I mean, this is what I was thinking immediately, having worked so long at Court TV and done so many court cases, is what if this thing went to trial? I mean, how do you prove it? I'm sure there's an attorney who's ready, willing, and able to take a retainer. And,
I'll tell you his name.
What's that?
I'll tell you his name. And yeah, I'll tell you who I think will wind up on the other side, too.
200 names of attorneys that would want to work for a celebrity. But, you know, they'll string them along and think, you know, how can I get my money? How can I get my money as an attorney? But the reality is, how in the world would this ever wind up in court? You'd have to convince a DA to file charges against Courtney Love, and then you'd have to, prove it.
Yeah. It'd have to be contributing to the delinquency of a minor, or, you know, things like that, or, you know, distribution of banned substances or something like that. And it would have to be Jack's testimony in front of a jury.
Oh, so it would be one druggie's word against another druggie's word.
Exactly, because Sharon has nothing to say because hers is all hearsay. If Jack said it to her, then she only heard her son say this, and the son would have to get up and testify about it, and it would just be a he said, she said between, you know, if Jack and Courtney were friends at one point, you got two friends up on the stand calling each other liars, and I'm not sure that it's anything that the public needs to be spending its money on.
Okay, so then Sharon Osbourne doesn't let it go. She's a pit bull. She wants some sort of mediation. She wants something. How do you sit down with two people as volatile as Courtney Love and Sharon Osbourne and get them to agree, at least not to disagree anymore?
With stun guns.
The hardest part is getting them to sit down literally physically in the room. What happens with celebrities a lot of times is they'll send their attorneys and they'll send their business managers and people like that to take care of this stuff. And I end up speaking with a lot of them on the telephone while their lawyers and their business managers are sitting with me in person. But if you can get them into the same room and explain to their attorneys and help their attorneys to convince them that it's worth their while to do this, then you sit them down and you say, let's talk about this. And I would simply ask Sharon whether she thinks that Courtney is responsible for her son's, solely responsible for her son's drug problems, or whether there may have been other things contributing to him. And I would ask Courtney, if you did, and I'm not saying that you did, but if you did give prescription drugs to a 15-year-old, what were you thinking? And have them both say, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe my position isn't 100% solid. A lot of what good mediators are trying to do, and whenever people out there are trying to talk it over, you're not trying to overpower somebody by making them admit they were wrong. You're just trying to induce a little bit of doubt and dissonance into their confidence in their position. And if Sharon Osbourne can say, yeah, you're right, I guess the environment of my family did make my son more prone to want to experiment. And if Courtney Love can say, well, hey, he was in a club, I didn't know how old he was. And, you know, if he asked for one of my drugs or if I offered him one or whatever, I didn't realize that I was, you know, leading a kid down a straight path. Now that I know he's 15, and had I known, I wouldn't have given it to him. Now you've got them both backing up a little bit and softening their positions. And now you can start to have a real conversation between them, where before it's just two extreme camps.
And now everyone can go out and get drunk.
Yeah.
All right. We have a caller.
You're good, though. I can see how you do this.
That
you
was excellent.
Take people away from their very solid stance and you make them, you know, where they're all clenched fists and clenched jaws, and you make them drop their shoulders and let their arms fall down and take a breath and say, oh, maybe I contributed to this problem, too.
Exactly.
It pulls them away from their hot place.
Exactly.
Now, we have a caller on the line, and actually Amy. Remember Amy, who was having a problem with the guests at her wedding because she didn't want to disrupt any of this former, either member of this former couple. Her girlfriend didn't want to come to the wedding if her former boyfriend was there with a date, et cetera, et cetera. So the wedding,
I remember this one.
Yeah, the wedding.
So let's review the geometry really quickly. Okay. The bride's
Amy,
best girlfriend.
Right.
And the groom's best
guy
buddy
friend.
Are a couple who split up.
Right. Right.
And the bride and groom want them both to be there.
Right.
And the couple doesn't want to be in the room with each other.
Right.
And so, Amy, you're calling back to check in with us.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Talk It Over.
Hi.
What have you got for us?
What's been going on? Amy, has this wedding occurred?
Yes, everything happened.
And?
Fill us in.
Oh, it was wonderful. It was a beautiful wedding. My friend was not there. So she never sent back her invitation or called me back when I tried to call her.
Did she know that? Give me the names again.
Oh, sure. My friend's name was Jennifer.
Yeah, and she didn't, and so her ex-boyfriend, he did show up or he didn't show up?
Her ex-boyfriend, his name was Steven, he did show up. But I tried to get a hold of her. I tried to get a hold of Jennifer, and she never even called us back, which was very odd because we're very close friends.
Have you spoken to her? Have you spoken to her since then?
Yeah, she had a party a couple weeks ago, and she was very embarrassed to see me, I think. Although she invited me to the party, but I just acted like nothing had happened.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I took Diane's advice and just kind of understood that the space she needed.
Mm-hmm. You know. And did Steven, did he show up with a date?
He did not show up with a date. Mm-hmm. He wanted to be respectful of Jennifer in case she did show up.
Ah.
So he said he wouldn't bring a date so that just in case that made her uncomfortable, but she never showed up anyway.
Okay.
Oh, that was nice of him. Yeah. Well, do you think that you and Jennifer will ever be as good of friends as you once were after this?
I don't, actually. I will always be her friend, but I suppose I feel a bit betrayed that she wasn't willing to even talk to me on the phone about it.
Well, I have a question for Lee J as we move forward here. Is the best thing for Amy to continue to ignore this, or is the best thing for her to sit down with Jennifer and say, we need to have a conversation about this?
Well, the first thing I would say is that when it comes to talking it over, it's always nice when we can tie everything up in a nice pretty bow and have a win-win solution and have had all of your friends at your wedding, Amy, and have them all get along beautifully. And that's always what we shoot for. But it sounds like in this case, even though that didn't happen, one way or another, everybody got what they wanted in their own way. It sounds like Jennifer wanted not to be there, and she accomplished that, and she couldn't face you as her girlfriend to tell you that. And Steven came but was respectful, and you guys, I assume, had a happy, wonderful wedding?
It was amazing.
Good.
Yeah.
Good, good, good. So,
hey, when you went to the party, Amy, and you saw Jennifer at her party, and you said you acted like nothing happened, but did you whisper to her at one point, hey, Steven came and he didn't have a date?
No, I just saw how mortified she was, and she brought it up, but it was sort of in a way that put the blame on other people. Like she said, I didn't give you an invitation. I thought I told someone to tell you that I wasn't coming, that kind of thing, without my having to say anything to her. And I could tell it was just something she was so not comfortable talking with at that moment. And it was her party. I didn't feel like it was right for me to continue talking about it.
Well, Amy, let me ask you this. As to Wheezy's question about whether you two should sit down and talk it over at some point, how do you feel about that? Do you feel the need to sit her down and have a girlfriend discussion with her?
I don't, in a way. I don't know. It's a good question. In a way, it's sort of like, I feel like she revealed to be someone to me that is a great person to be friends with and go to parties with, but not necessarily a person to be close friends with because of her absolute lack of willingness to communicate at all when I reached out to her about it.
Yeah.
Thank God Steven unloaded that bag.
Exactly. Like, it's sort of like you have friends that are great friends and close to you, and you have friends that are sort of shallower acquaintances, and you both agree that's the relationship. And you know, it might just be that's the relationship.
It's funny. It's not unusual for weddings to bring that out in people, because weddings are pinnacle moments in people's lives, and they bring to bear a lot of pressure, I think, in every angle. And what happens is you do find out who your real friends are when you get married. I think it's one time in life that you have sort of an across-the-board check-in, and you see who shows up for you and who doesn't. And, you know, by the same token, I hear a lot of forgiveness in your voice that she was just unable to even communicate with you about it. And clearly she was hurting pretty badly. And one day you may decide to say, it's okay, I understand. And, you know, but for now, you've looked at her and said, okay, I thought she was a closer friend than that, and clearly she wasn't, and I can live with that.
I actually forgot to go to one of my best friend's weddings.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you just forget?
Well,
Louise?
You've met Louise before, right?
My friend Emily was getting married, and her wedding was on February 28th. And boy, that month goes by fast. And I was writing around the clock for Rick Dees. I was just writing night and day, and I remember it was a Saturday night, and I was just writing away. And the next morning, I get a phone call at 9 a.m., and they're on their honeymoon, and they're like, "Where are you? Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm here." "Well, where were you? What do you mean? Our wedding was... Oh, my God.
Wheezy, were you in the wedding?"
"No, I okay. wasn't in the wedding."
"Thank God you weren't the maid of honor.
There's an extra bouquet here. Hmm."
But isn't that horrible? So there was no malicious intent. I just forgot. We didn't have mutual friends in common to where they were talking about, "Oh, Emily and Ron are getting married." And, you know, it was like she was a friend from Buffalo and I didn't know any of her other friends out here. So it wasn't like part of like the lexicon of what we were all discussing the month prior. It just slipped right past me. And we're still friends.
That's good.
That was like 20 years ago. So, but
that's so funny.
But yeah, it can happen. And, you know,
at least I hope you sent a gift.
I'm sure I sent a gift. I owed them probably a lot after. They still tease me about it. But they have two teenage kids now, so everything is fine.
Well, Amy, I'm really glad that you called us. And I, like Lee J says, I like to hear the, you know, wrapping the bow around the whole conflict and the end of it. I think that you are a much better friend to this woman than she has been to you, Ed, and that's to your credit.
Oh, well, thank you.
Very well
said. It also sounds like you handled everything beautifully. And
classy.
If at some point you decide you want to talk it over with her, give us a call.
All right. I definitely will.
Yeah.
Congratulations
on
your wedding,
Listen,
Amy.
Listen, if you want to call and, again, get this wonderful free advice, free mediation from none other than Lee J. Berman, 888-531-7171, or you can email us at talkitover@gmail.com.
Bye, Amy.
We got a strange email, guys. You want to hear this one?
Sure.
You got to love this.
Better,
this,
right?
This is Sarah from Reno, Nevada. Okay, you already have in mind that it might be something racy. Well, it is, sort of. Reno, Nevada. Here's what she writes. "I met a guy I really like, and I deliberately decided to take it slowly with him in the intimacy department. I'm a school teacher. He works in construction. When we had been dating a full 7 months, I finally decided that one particular night was going to be the night. But as we started to get hot and heavy, I realized that he has a tattoo in a place where I never realized a guy would ever get a tattoo. We did consummate the deal that night, but I have to say the tat really turned me off, and it still does. Lee J., could I somehow convince him to get it removed, or do I have to take him as is?"
All right.
Turn the lights out and enjoy each other.
What was that, Louise?
Turn the lights out and enjoy each other.
There you go.
That's funny because, you know, when you meet a guy on the second date, the third date, the fourth date, you don't really say, "By the way, do you have any tattoos, any place that I should know about that I haven't seen yet?"
Yeah, that'd be a great first date, you know.
Yeah.
I just have to, you know, in the interest of full disclosure.
Before we go any further.
I want
I don't
you
like
to
tattoos.
Know.
Before we go any further, may I kindly see your penis?
I don't like any tats.
As long as it's kindly.
I have an identifying marking.
On page 14 of the 17-page disclosure agreement you gave me on the first date.
That's right. And that was when they met at the speed dating night, you know.
So. See, but this makes me just want to ask, is there anything about his personality that would indicate he was the type of guy that would want to tattoo a nether region?
Well, he works in construction. I guess they're kind of macho guys with the, you know, leather tool belts hanging.
Maybe
I don't know.
It's an accident.
Just
an industrial accident.
Tool fell in his lap.
A very hot searing tool.
Yes.
Ow.
Yeah, that's it. That's
somebody
it.
Mis-aimed well, you know, this that is, nail gun.
Yeah.
A tool fell in his lap in the shape of a snake. wrapped around an angel.
Well, I have that to be with Sarah Benny on this one. I never knew guys would get a tattoo down there. I mean, I remember there was a hot and heavy rumor about Michael Jackson having Winnie the Pooh tattooed down there, which
let's
turned
not
out
go,
not to
let's
be
not
true.
Go there.
Really? So those were the identifiable markings?
Well, that was the rumor, but I confirmed that it was not true.
Well, I can confirm also.
How did you
that
confirm
it's...
that, Diane?
Don't ask my sources, babe. What were you going to say, Lee J? You what?
I was just going to confirm that that's not where my tattoo is.
But it is Winnie the Pooh, right?
No. All right, so the talk it over part. Let's get to this. She wants to have a conversation with her boyfriend. It's been 7 months. They finally got together physically, and he's got a tattoo in a place that we're all assuming is where it is. Go ahead, Wheezy, chime in. I see you.
It's on his penis.
Okay.
Because the other part is way too hairy.
Well, or maybe the inner thigh or, you know, the groin area. I don't know where it is. She's not specific.
I mean, get any further south, that could really be painful.
Yeah.
Anyhow, yeah, okay. So she wants to talk over with him. Here's the first thing that I heard is in the way she framed the question. And this is something when you want to talk it over with somebody and you want to invite them to have a conversation with you to talk something over, what you can't do is put your conclusion in the question. And what she said is there a way we could ever talk it over so that he would get it removed? So she already has the finish line in her mind of how she's going to define success in the conversation, and she's making that a condition of how they would sit down and talk it over together. So the first thing is we have to be careful how we ask the question. What she wants to say is, can we have a conversation about this tattoo? It's interesting. Tell me more about it. Because who knows what the significance is? Maybe he's part of what was in the Da Vinci Code? The Knights of the something or other, and maybe
you know, sepulchers or whatever.
Exactly.
I can't remember.
So the first thing you want to do is inquire with an open-ended questions and say, "Tell me more about it. Tell me, you know, what its meaning is to you. Tell me what you know." If he just says, "Oh, a bunch of us got drunk one night and went and got these, and you know, they all match or something," then you know it's one thing. If he says, this is something that's sacred and it's been 8 generations in my family and it represents, you know, you've got to give him room to explain what it means to him. And then say, let me tell you how it affects me. It's really hard for me because I can't get past that, when we're being together. So in talking it over, you've got to start by broadening the subject as far as you can and letting people express themselves about it first. Then you start narrowing the options down and saying, well, it would really make it nice if I never had to look at it again, but that doesn't mean I don't want to see you naked, right?
As Louise says, can't we just keep the light off?
Exactly. And maybe that's one of the answers. I don't know. But there's another piece to this too. You know, I hear things a little bit differently than some folks because I'm a mediator, but she waited 7 months and then had this experience that makes her concerned about going back for more, if you will.
Maybe he was the one waiting because he was afraid of what you would think when she saw the tattoo.
Maybe. And it's kind of interesting to me.
It tells me that this guy in her mind somewhere was special enough that she was going to, you know, take it slow, really find out that she liked him before they were intimate.
And in 7 months of dating, he never thought to have a conversation with her about it, or even as he's beginning to drop his pants in that moment and say, there's something you need to know.
There's a surprise inside.
Yeah.
it's Cracker Jacks.
At the bottom of the package.
Have I got a surprise?
The bottom of the
you.
Package. Wheezy is on tonight.
Oh, now, I'm not sure that Sarah's getting an answer out of here, but okay.
I'll talk with
him and say, first of all, that open question, why, where, how in the world did this come to be on your body?
Well,
but even without,
know,
without judgment, it's an interesting tattoo. Tell me what it means to you without saying, how in the world did you ever, you know, what the hell were you thinking? You know,
how drunk were you? Yeah. It's not a good opening.
Exactly.
Not for this conversation. No,
it might really be accurate, but not a good opening.
Right. You don't want your question bathed in judgment.
Exactly. And the other thing is, as much as she wants him to have it removed, she's got to also, I mean, that's a pretty extreme painful experience. It's something that it's asking him to change something that obviously he felt strongly enough about to get in the first place. You've also got to have her ask herself, do you love him enough? Are you willing to spend the rest of your life with him, knowing that that may be there? Because she's got to question her own value system as much as questioning his. One of the problems that's rampant in our world right now is we're all walking around with our belief system thinking that we're right about the whole world. And when somebody does something that's different than us, we immediately think that they're wrong and they have to change. And this is a situation where it's a matter of opinion. Clearly, there's nothing wrong with him having done this, except that it bothers her. So she's got to look at why it bothers her, and he's got to look at his willingness to make her happy. And it's going to be a pinnacle question for them in their relationship about how important they are to each other. It's an early test.
And if you think it hurt when he got it, don't you think it would really hurt if he tried to remove it?
That's exactly what I'm thinking. Bravery he went through or whatever to get a tattoo put in somewhere in the nether regions there. Taking it off, I would think, has to be three times as painful as putting it there. And he either has to really be in love with her and she has to be immovable in her willingness to adapt to it.
I have a solution. Let's say he's got like an eagle at prey. She could get like a leaping salmon. And then when they come together, it will be something for the Discovery Channel.
Excuse me? You didn't just say that.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
I was just thinking that maybe it was like his old girlfriend's name. That would really...
What? What is your tattoo, Weezy?
A leaping salmon. Okay.
Eagle at prey.
Oh, my God. Grizzly bear or eagle at prey.
I have one more question before we move on from this topic. Lee J., what is your tattoo and where is it?
Lee J., do you have
You'll have to watch the website for that.
Ooh, coming soon.
I got to say, the funniest tattoo I've seen of all time, though, was emailed to me. And it was a woman holding the front of her panties down lower so that you could see some of her hairs down there. And half of the hairs on the top of one side were shaved out of the way. And there was a tattoo of a little stick figure guy pushing a lawnmower across there.
But that's my friend Courtney Cronin's joke.
What's that?
She's been doing this joke for about 10 years.
Well, someone Courtney actually Cronin. Has the tattoo.
So it wouldn't have surprised me if by now someone went out and got that tattoo.
Oh, I saw this email 4 or 5 years ago probably.
Yeah, she's been doing that.
Well, what's the joke?
The joke is I'm going to get a tattoo, I'm going to shave a little part of my pubes, and then I'm going to tattoo a little man with a lawnmower.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Now, this is why our podcast here every week is now labeled explicit.
Yeah. I noticed that on iTunes, too.
Yeah, they got the whole listing for all the great podcasts. We're number 10 there. Wow, that's really great. But then it has this big red warning, explicit.
Oh, it's playfully explicit.
I thought that's what made people tune in.
I
it wasn't
swear.
The sage advice. It's the,
no,
it's the blue part.
Care.
Hey, we have one other email. And again, if anybody out there wants to email us, you know, we're coming in the home stretch here for this week, but email us. We read our email during the week. It's talkitover@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail and we can play it anytime, 888-531-7171. George in San Antonio, Texas did write to us. Lee J., you'll like this one. My wife and my mother have not talked in over 2 years. My wife and I have 3 children. 2 are of the age where they're very active in sports. They play baseball, soccer, football, tennis. You get the idea. But over the years, my mother has so angered my wife that she's finally had it. My wife won't communicate with my mother about when the kids' games are or anything about when ads are due for their programs and yearbooks. I guess that's something they do. They put little congratulatory ads in there. Mm-hmm. George says, I've tried to intervene, but it doesn't help. In fact, my involvement's only hurt my relationship with both my mother and my wife. I can't take it any longer. I'm an attorney used to settling disputes, but it's much easier for me to settle lawsuits for my clients than this. What should I do, Lee J?
Wow.
And P.S., Lee J., how do you feel about coming to San Antonio for me?
Well, and what was his name?
George.
I hope you're listening, but I'll come to San Antonio if you need me to. stuck in the middle, the first advice I would give George is step away. Step away from the conflict between the wife and the mother.
Step away from the women.
Exactly. There's nowhere a husband wants to be that's anywhere around his mother and his wife having a dispute. There is a way to talk it over. And clearly, something that his mother did angered his wife so much that she has cut off communication. Now, I don't think what she really wants is to deprive her children of having grandma be involved in their lives and come to their sporting events and cheer for them. That's not very maternal. I have a feeling this is really just between the mother and the mother-in-law, and this is her way of communicating with her. You upset me, and she can't say it, so she's done it passive-aggressive-wise with action. So what has to happen is we've got to sit them down together in a room and turn to the wife and say, what is it that this woman did that upset you so much that you're willing to cut your kid's grandmother out of your kid's lives and have her finally fess up to whatever it is? As a matter of fact, one time she said this to me at a party in front of people and I can't believe it. And whatever it is, she's got to get it out because we have to deal with the real issue, not the result of the real issue, which in this case is cutting her off from the kids. And then you've got to turn to the mother-in-law and say, do you now understand that she has the power to do this and that you fostering a relationship with your daughter-in-law is going to be critical to you having a relationship with your grandchildren? And frankly, we've got to put all the focus on the kids and what's in the kids' best interest, just like if it was a divorce case, and have the mom and the wife of this lawyer who wrote into us, George, he's got to get out of the way, have somebody else step in the middle. He can't do this because he's the one who's in pain right now, and have them talk about how to be involved in the kids' lives. The other thing is they both have to be made to understand what they're putting George through. I don't think George's mother wants to hurt him. I don't think his wife wants to hurt him. But in the end, they're not hurting each other as much as they're hurting George and the kids. And so these are two women who are being very selfish, who need to be set down in a room together and made to understand the impact of their dispute on the rest of their family.
You know what I think is tough, and I don't relate to this completely because I'm not someone who throws words, but I would think that once words are thrown, it's very difficult to muster the pride to reconcile.
Yeah, that old sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt me is such a fairy tale. It's so untrue because words hurt people's, you know, you can throw a stone and it bruises and it goes away. You hurt somebody's feelings and it lasts until it's resolved. Pardon me. And this is a situation where we've got to sit these two down and they have to have a discussion about what's bothering them. They can't keep tap dancing around it and being passive aggressive and doing things back and forth to hurt each other. They really need to sit down and say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it that way. Or I was really upset because you'd said this thing to me or about me. And they really have to have the conversation. So much festers in our society because we don't sit down and talk these things over when they're fresh and new.
Well, who's going to mediate that if not the husband? Someone should.
Yeah, and who gets them to the mediation table if you're telling George he needs to step away? But it's been 2 years, he says. Two years.
The husband, if I were in George's shoes, the first thing I would do is put them both together in the kitchen around the kitchen table and say, you're breaking my heart. You can't keep this up. Aww. I can't live like this anymore. You're my wife and you're my mother. I'm not going to pick. You two have to be grown up enough to work this out. I don't know what happened, but by the time you walk out of this room, I need to know that you've come to some sort of a truce. And if you can't do it for me, do it for the kids. And walk out of the room and let them and call them to the table and make them be adults with each other. And if that doesn't work, I was called in on a situation very, very much like this. Where the guy said, look, it's worth me paying your fee for a day to sit two of my family members down and have a conversation like this because it's that important to me that I don't live the rest of my life with this kind of a dispute. And
that's very interesting. And were you successful?
Yes. At the end, they were apologizing. They were shaking hands. They were promising. In fact, they pulled out their calendars and said, okay, little Jimmy's got a soccer game and, you know, this is what's coming up. And here, you know, do you want us to pick you up on the way to this practice? And, you know, they were working things out going forward because they'd work things out going backward. The things that had caused the dispute, they were able to talk through and resolve and understand each other's points of view enough that they were willing to engage one another again.
Now, I know mediation is secret, but can you tell us, what was it, a minor little dispute they had, or was it a big, was it over money or what?
It was over things that were said. It was over, I can't believe you said this to so-and-so about me, and all
or
that
back
kind
to
of
the words.
Yeah, back to the words. And not even firsthand, but I heard you said this to somebody about me, and I can't believe you said it.
Yeah.
And it turns out it was true, and she said, well, I did say it, but here's what I meant, and here's the context I said it in, and I never expected it to be repeated out of context, but all I was saying was, sometimes when you do this, you could be nicer when you do this thing, and they went on and had a conversation about it, and it worked everything out. Good. But that when somebody's doing something to hurt you, keeping you away from something or somebody, or purposely hurting you by their actions, the knee-jerk reaction is to hurt them back. Or to be hurt and act like a hurt person. Mm-hmm. The thing I'm trying to get folks to do when they're talking it over is to inject a moment of awareness in there about the other person, and take your awareness off of yourself for a moment and say, wow, for them to do this to me, if you're the grandmother in this dispute, in George's dispute, you've got to look at it and say, wow, for my daughter-in-law to cut me out of my grandkids' lives, I must have really pissed her off. I better get around the kitchen table with her and figure out what I did to make her so angry, because I don't want to be cut off from my grandkids. I better figure out why she's so angry, rather than lashing out to hurt her back to say, well, I'll show you, which doesn't do anything but escalate the dispute. Yeah. So we've got to stop for a moment and say, why is this person who's screaming at me so mad at me? You know, obviously not in a life-threatening situation or something, but if it's just, you know, family stuff like this, you've got to say, wow, you're really upset about something. Can we talk about this? Mm-hmm. And that's how
you know, my husband and his brother haven't spoken in years.
What?
And me, wow. I'm an only child. And I think to myself, gosh, if I had a sibling, I'd be all over them. I'd call them all the time. And they just, you know, his brother lives in Chicago and Michael lives in New York. And, you know, so once in a while they'll shoot an email for a birthday or something, but it's very terse. And I just, life's too short, you know?
So you're taking notes, Diane?
Yeah, I am.
You know, the funny thing is, long before I ever became a mediator, my grandmother and her sister, my great aunt, were the two who helped raise my dad when he was a kid. And when their father died, they had a fight over the estate. And I was a teenager. I was 17 years old or something like that. And they hadn't spoken in 21 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And I remember getting them together in New York. They both lived in Jersey, actually. I remember getting them together and sitting them down together around a table and saying, you two have to talk this out.
You did.
That was long before I ever heard of mediation or anything like
that.
Wow. Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, people just need someone to say, do it. And once somebody says, well, you really hurt my feelings when... then they're talking it over. And from that point, it may get messy for a moment or two, but eventually they get to vent, they get to let their feelings out, and they get to have that discussion, and things are always better going forward.
All right, yep. I think we have a caller.
We do. We have Robbie on the line, who is having a problem with a friend of hers.
It's a female Robbie.
Yes. Hello, Robbie.
Hi there. Hi.
Hi.
Hey, Robbie. Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks. I'm so glad I got to talk to you guys.
What's your conflict?
My problem?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm sure you have many, but give us just one.
Yeah, because I've got a lot. But anyway, a problem I'm really dealing with right now that's just really a pain for me is I've got this really good friend, and I won't give her name or anything because that would be an embarrassment, I'm sure. But she's just a leech. And she wants to, like, stay over at my house all the time. You know, like, have her over for dinner and stuff, and we hang out, you know, watch a movie or something. And then she always goes, well, can I just sleep here? And she wants to do that all the time.
Is she in love with you?
Perhaps a lesbian?
Well, yeah. Well, that would be the first thing you'd say. But, no, I'm sure that's not the case. She's got a boyfriend, although he lives out of town.
Does she have a home?
Yes.
Is it a long distance away from yours?
Well, yeah, it's a ways. So
okay.
She has to probably drive, a little over an hour, sometimes longer when traffic's in snarl, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, she thinks it's just a whole lot more convenient to just stay over. But it's not really convenient for me.
Hey, Robbie, it's Lee J. Let me ask you a couple of questions. What about it bothers you?
This kind of loss of privacy that I experience when she just wants to come and stay over all the time. Oh, well, I should have also added that she has relatives in my neighborhood. Like, she has a daughter who's married, just a newlywed, you know, but probably doesn't think that staying over at their house would be so cool or something. And then she's got a mother who lives, like, not too far away, really, you know, 10 minutes away. She's got other friends, but she kind of picks on my house because she likes my house, and the fridge is always full of beer.
And what?
Okay.
And so, what have you told her so far?
That she, you know, when she comes over, then I go, well, I really have to, you know, not stay up too terribly late. I've got to get to work in the morning, and you know, so it'd be probably best if we said goodnight if she left around, you know, no later than 10, something like that. So I clearly state that my intention is for her to be leaving. And then it gets later and later, and she just goes, you know, can I just stay? And then, you know, she'll just...
Does she bring a toothbrush? How does this work?
Yeah. She always has a little bag with her.
Wow.
Oh, man.
One so of those. it's kind of weird, and I, you know, it's making me real uncomfortable. But no, she doesn't make advancements on me.
So my first thing would be just to say, I need some me time. And just frankly say
well,
it.
What? She thinks because I'm single that I have nothing but me time.
Right, but she doesn't get to think for you.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
It's time for you to be a little bit more direct with her. It sounds like you've been very indirect. You've said, you know, yeah, let's just do this till about 10 o'clock tonight. Come on over and hang out for a bit. And she hasn't taken the hint, so you've got to ratchet it up and be a little bit more direct. And
yeah.
Next time she, you know, do what you've done so far. Set the boundary, set the expectation, tell her, you know, 10 o'clock or so, because I've got to get up early in the morning or whatever. And then when 10 o'clock comes, go, you know what, it's really time I start turning in. I'm so glad you came over. See what she does. And if she doesn't get the hint and says, can I stay over, then you've got to sit down next to her and have a conversation. The one that you haven't had to this point, you've really got to have a conversation with her and say, you know, I've got to talk to you about this. I live alone on purpose because I really like living alone. And I'm happy to have you come, you know, spend the night if you're coming for a weekend or something, if we work it out in advance. But when you come over for the evening, I really like to have my place to myself after my guests go home. And it's not personal and it's not about you. It's just important to me to have that time alone.
I need time to miss you.
Well, also, I don't like it that if my boyfriend comes in late from work or whatever, you know.
Then, yeah.
Yeah.
There goes
then
that
he
moment.
Were to come in and go, okay, who's, what's yeah. she doing here?
Yeah.
Yeah. You really have to let her know how it feels. And the best way to do that is to do it from the point of view about how it affects you. It's
okay.
really hard for me because I really enjoy my privacy, or I really, you know, I never know when my boyfriend's going to come in late, and we like our privacy when, you know, when he comes home late at night. And, you know, I love having you come visit, but I'm afraid I can't ask you to stay.
What do you think her reaction
would be? Sounds very direct. Can I add just a little bit to this problem, or are
sure.
we running out of time?
No,
go ahead,
right
please.
Ahead.
Okay, well, she's a really fun person, and she's incredibly funny, which makes her all that much more fun to be around, of course. But wherever we go, whatever we do, she leaves and goes to the restroom when the bill for the meal comes.
Ooh, she is a leech. What did you call her?
When we go to the theater, she suddenly, oh, my gosh, I don't have any cash, you know, and or something. You know, I find myself picking up the bill all the time, too. So, yeah, it's all part of the same kind of little personality trend here.
So she's a, what was the word you used? A
leech.
A mooch, a leech. Yeah. Wow. That conversation needs to include more aspects than just her crashing. Her sense of entitlement is, I think, what's in question right now.
I think they're two separate issues, believe it or not. The
really?
The staying over thing is really a privacy issue, mm-hmm. but when you're going out somewhere and she doesn't have money, again, if you're willing to be direct with her.
Well, I think it would be a privacy issue, but she likes to use all of my cosmetics and, you know, shampoo and hairspray and lotion and whatever. You know, it's mm-hmm. like privacy plus help yourself to my entire cosmetic cabinet.
And your beer.
Now, my beer.
And your beer. Robbie, do you work with this woman, or how else is she in your life?
No, I don't work with her. She's
Have you ever tried just not answering the door?
Well, I'm getting to that point, ladies and gentlemen, where I'm feeling like perhaps I just won't answer those calls. Thank heaven for caller ID.
So, yeah, Robbie, you have a choice.
I'm kind of sad about it because we've had some fun times.
That's the key. You've got a choice here. You've got to say, is this a friendship that I'm comfortable without? And completely turn her away, or you've got to sit down with her and say, look, I really value our friendship, but when we go out to dinner or go out to the movies or whatever, it has to be mutual. I pick up a lot of the checks, and when the checks come, it seems like you disappear to the bathroom a lot. If you want to be in a friendship with me, you have to respect me, and it has to be mutual.
Since it sounds like you have a good sense of humor, I think you can say this with a level of humor just to kind of disarm the tension. What do you think of that, Lee J?
Yeah, definitely. Humor's dangerous because it can be misused, but right. I agree that if you're uncomfortable being that direct, then be yourself. Be funny.
Robbie, let's make a promise here. Why don't you, in the next week or the next time she pops over and wants to stay again, why don't you have this kind of a conversation like Lee J is suggesting, and then call us back and tell us what her reaction was? She may be as dense as a tree stump and not even get it.
Oh, she may not. I know what we talked from her place, which is down closer to the beach, and ran up overage charges on my cell phone. And I kind of I pointed that out because they went up to about $45 of overage charges. Ooh. Now, that's not a huge amount, but it's significant enough to where, you know.
It's several
and I mentioned
six packs
it
of
to
beer.
Her, and I said, how about, you know, you just, you know, pitch in $20 and you know, we'll call that even. And she was just incensed. She goes, I can't believe you'd ask me to pay your phone bill. And I go, well, these are just overage charges between your phone and mine.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it was great that you approached her. It shows great strength that you're willing to have a conversation with her. And, you know, in the meantime, I like Diane's suggestion very, very much. And I didn't hear you say that you'd be willing to do it.
I will, though.
Okay.
No, I will. And I'll try to be a bit more serious because it makes me a little, nervous. And then.
And I'm not sure how women do this. I can tell you how guys do this when it comes to the check. When the check comes, you open up the thing and it says it's, you know, $45 or whatever. You put your credit card in it, you leave it open, and you slide it to the other person, which is their hint to put their credit card in. And you can even say to them, looks like it's going to be about $25 each.
And then you just
let it sit there in front of them until they put their credit card in. And, you know, when the waitress comes, you say, just split it between the two cards or something like that. When they get up and they go to the bathroom, when the check comes, you just leave it sitting there open in front of them so that when they come back from the restroom, it's still there. And let the server wait, you know, 5 minutes until she comes back from the restroom. And then say, here's my card. You want to put yours in too, and we'll just split it? And just make the suggestion.
And I would just tease her every time she gets up to go to the bathroom, just say, you're not getting up to go to the bathroom just when the check comes, young lady.
Yeah.
You get back here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Leave your credit. You can go pee, but leave your credit card.
You can leave your credit card.
It doesn't need to pee.
Yeah, I would always be just so amazed at kind of the bravery of doing
it's
that.
It's audacity. It's beyond bravery. It's audacity.
I wouldn't even, you know, and now I will. I'll think to say, you're not going anywhere.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, you have to
all
start
right,
calling
call
her
back
on
and
it.
Tell us what happens, would you, Robbie? I'd really be interested to hear what her reaction is.
Okay, I'm sure she'll come by sometime this week and want to spend the night.
And I've got another challenge, by the way, for everybody else out there who's listening to this week, who has a moocher, a leech in their life, because so many people do. Write us, call us. Let's have a conversation about it next week. When Robbie calls back in, we'll see what everybody else has had to say, too.
Okay, great idea.
Thank you, Robbie.
Thank you, Robbie.
Guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
All righty, bye.
All right, so what's this new segment that we're going to introduce here tonight? Who's going to tell the folks about that?
Matt's got a new segment.
I had an idea for this, and this happened today when I was rudely cut off in traffic. And, you know, that's one of those situations where you can't really go and talk it over with, you know, the person who cut you off. You usually have a few choice words, but in the privacy of your own car, and as long as you don't gesture too wildly, you're not in any danger, and you get it off your chest and you feel better. I thought maybe our Talk It Over listeners might appreciate that opportunity to simply call in or write in and get a good rant off their chest about something that's been bothering them. Not necessarily, you know, work something through, but oftentimes when you just tell somebody about it or get a good chance to just spill it, then you feel better at the end. So I'd like to invite our listeners to call 888-531-7171 during the week and leave us a message, or on Saturdays starting at 4 o'clock Pacific, 7 o'clock Eastern, call us live and you can rant with us, or send us an email. And we would just love to hear some of your venting.
I have one.
Please.
Why is the car in front of me and the car in the lane next to me, why are they both driving at 60 miles an hour in tandem for 17 miles?
Somebody doesn't want you to go any faster.
Yes.
You do have a strange... I have one which I would love to rant more about next week because we're almost out of time.
Okay.
But it has to do with my doctor's office.
Ooh. Ooh.
Not one doctor's office, but all the doctor's offices that I go to. And I'm not a hypochondriac, but whenever I go, I have the same problem. So if you have a doctor story, get it ready for next week.
Cool.
Okay. Cool. Will
do. Well, so I like Matt's idea. We talked about this. And if people call or email during the week, all you have to do to introduce it is say, this is my rant. And we won't talk about it anymore. We won't problem solve it. You just get to call up and vent. Because a big part of mediation is getting it off your chest. And so if you just want to rant or vent and get it off your chest, you got 30 seconds, 60 seconds if you can use it, go and tell us what really just bugs you and we'll just play it and move on.
All right, so give out those phone numbers and those emails one more time.
888-531-7171 to leave us a voicemail during the week or be live on Saturdays with us, or email us at talkitover@gmail.com.
All right.
Okay, I have one funny to leave us with this week. In Spokane, Washington, they made a list all the school days that you got off and all the important holidays that all of the school kids in Spokane, Washington should observe or be aware of. And in the December newsletter to the families of these elementary school students, the Spokane Public School list did not include Christmas. Hello.
But it
had Hanukkah. It had Human Rights Day. It had Islamic Holy Day called Eid al-Adha. It had the first day of winter. It had Kwanzaa, but it had no Christmas.
The Grinch stole it.
Now, you know, I happen to be the Christian one in this little cast here, and you know, may I just say that makes me mad. I want a mediation, Lee J. I want you to Spokane, Washington.
This is
right
Diane
now.
Diamond versus the city of Spokane in this corner.
I mean, am I wrong?
Well, did it include
of course.
Purim?
It's in the spring, Weezy.
No, it didn't, but it did.
All right, well, then one for us, one for you.
There you go. It had something strange just called winter break. Winter break. And you know how the school superintendent explain this. He said, well, Christmas is so dominant in our society, I don't know that anyone should feel slighted. They must know it was coming up.
Oh.
Not good enough for me.
Yeah. No, clearly you have a right to be upset about this, Diane, and so does everybody else who's upset that it was left off, because it's not right. It's also not right when other things are left off. This is clearly the pendulum swinging so far in the direction of all-inclusiveness that they forgot the obvious, the biggest holiday that 90% of the country celebrates on the 25th of December.
It's the biggest holiday of the year next to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And with that.
All right. So we have had a great show. Thank you, callers. Thank you, emailers. Thank you, Listeners, thank you for participating. Thank you, Lee J.
You're welcome, Wheezy. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane Diamond.
My extreme pleasure.
And Talk It Over is over.